the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we start with our special order of business, we all might want to keep our southern neighbor Ketchikan in our thoughts tonight and prayers as they had a float plane collision with a few fatalities that we know of already. So please keep Ketchikan in our thoughts. So moving on to special order of business, we have that's item number two. Thank you, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Would you call the roll, please, Madam Clerk?
Thank you. Ms. Becker?
Here.
Mr. Bryson?
Present.
Mr. Edwardson?
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Ms. Hale?
Here.
Ms. Hughes Scandy?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Treem?
Here.
She said here.
No,
can you hear me?
Missing someone. I did hear you. Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor Weldon.
Here. Did we get you, Ms. Hale?
I had an extra line for Mr. Keel in my notes, and I was thinking I was missing someone. Sorry about that.
That's good.
And Spirit.
He's here. As always. So. Okay, with that, we go to our special order of business for our proclamation for Building Safety Month. So could I have my builders in the audience come up, please? You have to listen to me read this, sorry. Anyway, a proclamation for Building Safety Month. Whereas the City and Borough of Juneau is committed to recognizing that our growth and strength depends on the safety and economic value of the homes, buildings, and infrastructure that serve our citizens, both in everyday life and in times of natural disaster. And whereas our confidence in the structural integrity of these buildings that make up our community is achieved through the devotion of vigilant guardians, building safety and fire prevention officials, architects, engineers, builders, tradespeople, design professionals, laborers, plumbers, and others in the construction industry who work year-round to ensure the safe construction of buildings. And whereas these guardians are dedicated members of the International Code Council, a U.S.-based organization that brings together local, state, and federal officials that are experts in the built environment to create and implement the highest quality codes to protect us in the buildings where we live, learn, work, and play. And whereas our nation benefits economically and technologically from using the international codes that are developed by national volunteer consensus codes and standards developing organization, our government is able to avoid the high cost and complexity of developing and maintaining these codes, which are the most widely adopted building codes and fire prevention codes in the world. And whereas these modern building codes include safeguards to protect the public from natural disasters such as hurricanes, snowstorms, tornadoes, wildland fires, floods, and earthquake, which according to the FEMA Commission study by the National Institute of Building Sciences provide $11 in future mitigation benefits for every dollar invested. And whereas Building Safety Month is sponsored by the International Code Council, to remind the public about the critical role of our company's largely unknown protectors of public safety, our local code officials who assure us of the safe, efficient, and livable buildings that are essential to America's prosperity. Now, therefore, I, Beth A. Weldon, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby issue this proclamation making May 2019 as Building Safety Month in Juneau, Alaska. Thank you, all the builders. Mr. Hedges, you want to come up and accept this? Or else tell me who else I need to give it to. And before I hand you the mic, because I know you're long-winded, I would guess a lot of this audience is receiving a certification tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the home build at Jackie Street if anybody wants to join us.
Yeah. Thank you, Mrs. Mayor. This is the home build class from Juneau Douglas High School, Yada Akale. They have completed a year-long program and will be tomorrow presented with their certificates of building code specialists in the residential code. And thank you to the assembly for getting this done and for recognizing these folks. I also want to mention that they did, in March, spend a week with working with Habitat for Humanity, building three homes. And so I think it's great that these young folks are doing that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Congratulations.
You got to make it. Good job. Thank here. You. Make that kid come over.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, good job, buddy.
Congrats. Congratulations. Yeah. Right on. Thank you.
Congratulations. And nice job.
Thanks. Thanks so much. Yeah.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Our second proclamation tonight is for Infrastructure Week, so could we have Mr. Yucatel and anybody else that would like to join us up here? He can bring a friend. So whereas the week of May 13th through 20th, 2019 is observed in the city and borough of Juneau and nationally as Infrastructure Week, and whereas Juneauites rely on critical infrastructure, including our roads and bridges, our railroads and transit systems, our ports and airports, our pipes and water system, our reliable power supply, our access to broadband, and our connectivity to the regional, national, and global economy, and whereas this infrastructure enhances our local and regional economy, our quality of life, our safety, and the strength of our communities, and whereas decades of underfunding and deferred maintenances have pushed infrastructures to the brink of a national crisis with preventable catastrophic failures, including derailments and collapses, occurring as a result, and whereas the United States of America risks losing its competitive advantage to foreign economies by failing to adequately invest in its infrastructure, whereas every dollar invested in infrastructure generates nearly $2 in economic output, and whereas Infrastructure Week 2019 has been established to highlight infrastructure investment needs and to recognize and encourage leadership at the federal, state, and local levels, and whereas Infrastructure Week challenges policymakers and the public to address the challenges facing U.S. infrastructure, to move beyond short-term fixes and deferred maintenance, and to envision the innovative solutions, technologies, policies, and investments that will improve America's infrastructure future. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the American Society of Civil Engineers officially recognize the week of May 13th, 2019 as Infrastructure Week, and urges the citizens of Juneau to join in this special observance with appropriate events and commemoration. Resolve further that despite fiscal challenges, it is important for the city and borough of Juneau to dedicate sufficient resources to transportation and infrastructure investments in our community. And now, therefore, I, Beth Weldon, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim May 13th through the 20th, 2019, as Infrastructure Week 2019. And I'm going to give you the mic because you have several activities planned this week.
Thank you, Mayor. So we had the first kickoff of the Infrastructure Week today. And Infrastructure Week is a national event. It's sponsored by the American Society of Civil Engineers, AFL-CIO, Chamber of Commerce, and other national organizations. And so today we had a briefing on the Infrastructure Report Card for Alaska. In Alaska, infrastructure is unique. I was on the flight down to Ketchikan last week. I was just noting all the, you know, we consider Alaska, we're an aviation state. We're also a maritime state, but from an aviation perspective, Alaska Airlines flies into 20 communities in Alaska, only three of which are on the road system. One of those three is Dead Horse. So we have unique challenges in Alaska to maintain and improve infrastructure that advances our community needs. Roadways as well in Alaska. We've got less paved highways than the state of Rhode Island. So lots of challenges, but it's important to keep infrastructure in everybody's mind. And this week, Doc Snarbers, we're going to be celebrating just small ribbon cuttings, mostly for maintenance projects that we've completed over the winter. Maintenance is very important to infrastructure. there's estimates that, you know, if you can keep up a rigorous maintenance program, you're going to maintain what you have saves on the order of six times what it would cost to replace. So I appreciate Mayor and the Assembly for recognizing Infrastructure Week this week. And if you have a chance, please come to any of our activities.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll go to approval of minutes. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. There are very few, very small. In fact, our clerk already has the corrections online. So I move that we accept the minutes as presented with a few corrections and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, minutes are approved. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll move to the manager. Mr. Manager, do you have any requests for agenda changes?
No changes, thank you.
All right, and then we'll move it to public participation on non-agenda items. All right, looks like we have two. Can we have Kim Metcalf, please?
Thank you, Mayor Weldon and members of the Assembly. My name is Kim Metcalf, and I live at 730 Gold Street. I'm the third generation owner of the property. As of April 16th this year, my family has owned the house for 90 years, which is kind of an accomplishment in a way. My home is part of the Basin Road neighborhood. I'm here tonight to bring your attention to traffic problems on Basin Road caused by the increase in cruise ship tourism. Vehicular traffic on the road has been building for the last several years, and with the increase in cruise ship passenger numbers this year, traffic's going to increase even further. I use the road on a regular basis to walk the dog and to run. And the road is a favorite of locals. There have been a lot of people up there recently, local people. During what I call the tourism wars of the 1990s, traffic was again an issue on the road. And my neighbors and I were successful in convincing the owner of the Gold Creek Salmon Bake, who was Alaska Travel Adventures, I think they still are, to move the business to their present location at Salmon Creek. At the time, the Salmon Bake was running 30 bus trips, and these are school bus-sized buses, up the road. And so that meant there were 60 trips because it's an out-and-back route. And two vehicles can't pass on much of the road. One would have to stop and wait for the other. We were also successful in getting the city to install a gate near the present Mount Roberts trailhead. The city would not agree to close the gate year-round like we wanted at the time, but they did agree to close it from November 1st through April 15th. And my goal of coming here tonight is to convince you to close the gate year-round to address the traffic problems. Now, I put this out on Juneau Community Concerns, a Facebook page, and got a tremendous amount of traffic on that statement about the road. And people said, well, how can you possibly suggest closing off a city road year-round? And I think that there are a couple really good reasons to do that. First of all, the road is not stable. There's significant erosion on the Gold Creek side of the road between the first bridge, the trestle bridge, and the second bridge. And the road is sloughing off. About a month ago, a car went off the side. I called the JPD today to try and get some details on that, but they said they'd have to research it. When the road's wet, it's slippery. It's kind of got a clay-like surface, and it's not the first time cars have gone off that road. In fact, my daughter went off with friends years ago, and was lucky she didn't get killed in that accident. In addition to the condition of the road, the number of cruise ship passengers is increasing, as we all know, and as I said before. And I would hope you give me the latitude to go a little bit longer on this.
If you can wrap up, that would be
good. Okay. So a group of Jeeps went by. There were about 9 or 10 of them, and they're part of a tour company called Unplugged Adventures. I checked out their website to figure out how people knew about Basin Road as a destination and found out that the vehicles have a number of local tour suggestions built into their GPS system. One is Gold Creek. The information on the website states, if you're up for an adventure, we've provided gold mining pans, diggers, and keepsakes in the back of your vehicle for an unforgettable mining experience. Now, I have nothing against this company, but this tour is in addition to the Alaska Travel Adventures gold panning tour, private taxi tours, and other self-guided tours, and local traffic. A concern I do have with the Unplugged Tour is the fact that they're providing gold panning equipment. I have long felt that the current gold panning that Alaska Travel Adventure provides is not a wise activity to have occurring in Juneau's main watershed. And to add to it, the Unplugged tourists mucking around in our main water supply is another reason to stop this kind of activity.
Ms. Metcalf, can you wrap it up?
I'm trying to. So anyway, I guess what my request here tonight is to ask that you have city staff look into closing the road year-round. I'm just starting this conversation. I'm going to solicit community support for this effort, and you'll probably be hearing more from me at a later time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Metcalf? Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Metcalf. So if the road were closed right before the bridge, then presumably these people doing these activities might park there and walk up. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what I have in mind. There is parking there. A lot of people park there right now and walk up. The gate, as I said, is closed during the winter months, and that doesn't, you know, stop people from going up there. And, you know, it set a precedent that the city was willing to do that. And, as I said, it's a safety concern and as well as, you know, a quality of life concern. I think of it as our backyard. And plus the neighborhood. I mean, we cannot tolerate that kind of traffic. That's why we were fighting it in the 90s. And, you know, it's just too much. We have a very kind of a rural feel to that neighborhood, and the traffic is just getting impossible again.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Ms. Hughes-Scandies?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Metcalf. Can you help me visualize mentally? Because I'm sure standing there, I would know. If you could orient me verbally from the Mount Roberts trailhead, you're talking about the gate beyond that?
Right beyond that, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It looks like we have John Covington.
Good morning.
And you'll have 3 minutes.
First of all,
can you state your name and address, please?
Oh, I'm John Stuart Covington. And let me preface this. You know what? I'm a priest of the Most High Living God, Jesus, and I've been speaking to him about this issue with this city for years and years, and you guys are just getting out of control. You got such a tight grip on this community that people that live here can't go out and enjoy it. This community is not set up for just a few people to use for their own personal enjoyment. It should be open for all people, right? And it doesn't matter whether it's tourists coming in or the people that live here. We all have a right to use Basin Road, Gold Creek, and the recreational opportunities it provides. And to close it off to just a few people, I understand her complaint about the traffic. It's horrible. But closing the road off that we spend millions of dollars to maintain and bring people up, you're cutting out revenue. You want to talk about doing away with the business and revenue for the city? That just, no, there's got to be a better solution. I didn't come here for that. But in your, I looked at the sign that you got posted up there. And the problem is it says, we don't have a problem with sluice boxes and dredges. We understand that. But when you tell us we can't even use a shovel to dig the ground up to put it in our pan, that's radical. The ground is so compact. If you don't use a shovel, how are you going to get it out and put it in your pan? Most people have a plastic gold pan. How long do you think that thing's going to last if I scrape it across the ground, across all the rocks? You're going to destroy it. That's just common sense ignorance. That's why you use a pick and a shovel and you put it in your pan and pan it out. I have a gold pan I paid $35 for. You think I'm going to destroy it on a little bit of rocks because somebody is being a radical of stupidity? Right here it says, engage in recreational mining. As used in this section, recreational mining means casual and isolated efforts to collect plastic gold using shaker tables, sluice boxes, pumps, and any other device, but not including gold pans, whether used by individuals or organized groups. Now, this does not say no shovels, no picks, no 5-gallon buckets, because if I dig over yonder, how am I going to get it from here to the water? I got to put in a 5-gallon bucket. How am I going to dig it up, right, unless I use a pick and a shovel? And this stupid reasoning that's been going on for years about, hey, you know, it's our watershed. How much of a distance is it from the rail car bridge where Gold Creek goes under, where you actually drop down the water table, from there up there to the mining museum? It's well over half a mile. You really think that this little bit of gravel that I dug up is going to float all the way down, meandering through corners? And that's just pure stupid. You know, the other day I was up there using a battery-operated gold panning machine, and it dumps the material right there, but it builds up. So how am I going to move it out of the way so I can continue panning? Well, you should be able to use the shovel, but instead I use my foot and scoot to the side. This is just unproductive. This is just wrong. You know what? The sign has added no shovels. But if you look at the ordinance, there is nothing in here about not using a shovel or a pick. And the other thing I noticed, that gold panning company, Alaska Travel Adventures, they have this big pile of gravel delivered. Well, what do? They take a shovel and they put it into the wheelbarrow and take it over to the metal rail cars and they dump it in there with the shovel. Then they put it in the pans. Once they sprinkle it with gold,
Mr. Covington, can you wrap it up, please?
Okay. So, you know what? You're allowing Alaska Travel Adventures to break the law. You allow them to create a law that prevents everybody else from using a shovel, but they can't. No, you can't have it both ways. You know what? You got to apply it to everybody. And the lady that lives at the mining museum, her and her husband, I watched her come and unlock the gate at the bridge and lock it back. And I said, what is the gate being locked during the tourist season? Why is it locked? Why is this whole mountain closed off to the whole community? Is it just for those that couple living there at the mining museum to enjoy? No, there's something wrong. They have no reason to lock that gate and prevent me. I can't get across the street.
Mr. Covington, we need to wrap up. So,
okay. So you know, I hope that you guys talk about this and bring us into this. Tell me I can't go up and pan if I don't use the shovel, because you just brought me to a halt if I obey the law. Do you want me to break the law? Well, of course you don't.
Okay.
So, you know, this stupid environmentalist,
okay, Mr.
radical thinking.
Mr. Covington, are there any questions for Mr. Covington? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Is there any other public participation on non-agenda items? Okay, that moves us to the consent agenda. Are there any public requests for consent and agenda changes other than ordinance for introduction? Are there any assembly requests for consent agenda changes? Assembly Action. Ms. Bioshevsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Ms. Treem, I'm assuming you're not objecting unless you pipe up.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Consent agenda is approved. So that moves us to public hearing. Madam Clerk, item A.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2018-11AH, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1,150,367 is funding for various capital improvement projects at the Juneau International Airport, funding provided by passenger facility charge fees.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $1,150,367 to the following capital improvement projects in the following amounts: rehabilitate runway, $713,745. Terminal reconstruction, $214,634. Taxiway A, E, D1, $200,000. Sand chemical fuel facility construction, $21,988. Funding is provided by passenger facility charge collection. It will be used to provide new construction funds and reimburse forward funded amounts in these projects. Public Works and Facilities Committee approved this action at its April 8, 2019 meeting. Airport Board approved this action at its April 9, 2019 meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Bryson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2018-11AH, appropriating $1,150,367 as funding for various CIP for the Juneau International Airport, and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Ms. Glashef.
Just for the purpose of a question, Madam Mayor. So this for reimbursed forward funding amounts and CIPs sounds like complicated. Can someone explain all of that briefly, very briefly?
So the manager is waving and...
Airport manager or somebody.
Okay, Mr. Bartholomew, you got the short straw.
Okay, so this ordinance in front of you.
No.
We're on AH.
We're on
AH.
Right. Okay. So AH, correct? Yeah. So the airport on an annual basis receives passenger facility charges from the paid by the passengers, authorized by the FAA. And once or twice a year, the authorized amount that we expect to receive is being appropriated. So what's in front of you is the airport and the airport board's recommendation for how the FY20 allocation should be spent. And so they're picking four projects that are eligible for passenger facility charges.
Mr. Bartholomew, I was just asking about the reimbursed forward funded amounts in these CIPs.
Okay. So
just the
yep, okay. Thing. So for example, the airport has a fund that they're allowed to forward fund projects. And then when when the funding's not yet available. So the assembly will appropriate that money, and then in this case, when the passenger facility charges become available, we actually will go back to where those funds were originally expended, and we will reimburse the project, and we'll take that revolving loan fund money back into a holding pot until the next time they need it. So, and fund balance. There's two fund sources where we're trying to work with the airport, allow them to do that forward funding and reimbursement, and trying not to use it for any other funding sources. But for now, the ones we'd like them to use are this revolving loan fund that they have and the fund balance of the airport. Okay.
Did that answer your question,
yes.
McGlashevsky?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew.
And Ms. Watto's here also. Do you want to add anything, or Ms. Watto, are you good?
Okay. I remove my objection.
Thank you. Okay. Any other objections? Seeing and hearing none, ordinance 2018-11AH is moved. Okay, it brings us to item B. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Transfer T1014A. Excuse me. T1014, a transfer of $610,759 from the runway rehabilitation CIP A50-079 to the terminal construction CIP A50-102 and terminal reconstruction design construction CIP A50-096.
All right, thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
In fiscal year 15, sales tax funds in the amount of $610,759 were transferred from the terminal project to the runway project via transfer T955 to match a Federal Aviation Administration construction grant with the explicit intent to repay upon appropriation of replacement funding to the runway project. Current appropriation of passenger facility charges includes those replacement funds. The original funds can be returned to the terminal project. Public Works and Facilities Committee approved this transfer at its April 8, 2019 meeting. Airport Board approved this transfer at its April 9, 2019 meeting. I recommend you approve this transfer.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any member of the public wish to speak to this transfer? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the Assembly approve this transfer T1014A of $610,759, and I ask for unanimous consent.
And I don't know if we need to clarify that there's no A, it's just the next line.
Oh, thank you.
All right, any objections? Seeing and hearing none, this transfer is approved. Brings us to item C. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2018-11AI, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $190,643 as funding for a 3D scanner and thermal imager. Funding provided by the State of Alaska Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
State of Alaska Department of Public Safety was allotted funds for crime prevention and response and equipment. Through this program, they have approved reimbursing the Juneau Police Department $190,643. This includes $183,643 for a 3D scanner, supporting equipment, software, and training. Remaining $7,000 funding will be used to purchase a new thermal imager. A 3D scanner is a tool used to accurately map complex crime scenes and locations. Use of a 3D scanner significantly reduces the time spent at an investigation and increases the accuracy of the forensic data collected, improving the efficiency and accuracy of an investigation. Thermal imagers are used at night or in dark locations to locate suspects or people who are unable to verbally respond. JPD has a thermal imager, however, it is near the end of its life cycle. There is no match requirement for this reimbursement agreement. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move, bring it to the Assembly. Ms. Hughes-Scandies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2018-11AI and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Bryson.
I object for the purpose of a question, Madam Mayor.
Go ahead, Mr. Bryson.
With the current JPD thermal imager near the end of its life cycle, does that mean that it just has to be disposed of when it's done, or is that possible that we could sell that thermal imager to maybe a smaller municipality that would be able to utilize that equipment?
Ms. Cosgrove.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Bryson, it really depends on what shape the equipment is in. I don't know about selling. That's always a possibility. We also have a fairly close working relationship with the smaller communities, and often there's an agreement where we pass along equipment to them that is still in viable condition. I don't know whether that would be a dollar amount. Again, it would just depend on what the condition of the equipment is. I can get you a specific answer, though, if you want, by asking the chief.
Not necessary. I want to make sure it was going to a good home. We weren't just wasting it.
No. It always goes to a home if it's got useful life.
I remove my objection, Madam Mayor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Any other objection? Seeing and hearing none, so moved. All right. That brings us to item D. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2018-11AJ. An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of up to $35,000 as funding for visitor information kiosk replacement capital improvement project. Funding provided by the DOC funds fund balance.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
Docks and Harbors Board requests an approval of an appropriation ordinance to transfer $35,000 from the Docks Funds fund balance for construction of a new visitor information kiosk. Kiosk's project is currently under construction. During the course of excavation for the foundation and drainage system, unknown underground utilities, including phone data and electrical vaults and cabling, were discovered. Management of these systems within the design required additional work to prepare the site for completion of the project. The DOCS funds fund balance is currently $2 million. On packet page 65 of 76 is the appropriation ordinance, and there is a typo. In section 2, the appropriation is incorrectly listed as $30,000. It is correctly listed in the title and section 3, source of funds. So we would ask that you move an amended version of this ordinance, changing that section 2 dollar amount from $30,000 to $35,000. Docks and Harbors Board considered this item at its regular meeting on April 24, 2019. I recommend you adopt the amended version of this. Back at page 65.
Okay, Mr. Manager, we're looking at 65 and it says 35,000 unless we're missing it somewhere.
Yep. In section two.
Okay. See it now. Thank you. We were missing it somewhere. All right. Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any member of the public want to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First, I'll move that we amend the ordinance, Section 2, amount from $30,000 to $35,000.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so amended. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And now I move that the ordinance or the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2018-11AJ as amended, and I ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections, Mr. Jones?
I'm going to object. A statement and a question. When I read this, I sent the manager and others a note. Basically, wanted to know, with all of the construction projects that had gone on in that little corner of the world. Parking garage, the library, the brickyard, the deck over. how they can now discover a vault that costs extra money. The manager explained to me that construction companies that do construction work oftentimes don't complete the as-builts, and that they're always finding things that they don't realize are in the ground. It still bothers me that this wasn't a known factor in that little corner of the world. I ask a second question, and I haven't gotten an answer yet, probably because I was asking these questions at 5 o'clock. But almost every project that I've worked on, there's been a contingency fee. So I went back to Docks and Harbors to review the minutes of April 24th, and they are not published yet. So I have no idea what the discussion was at the Docks and Harbors board. And I was just trying to figure out, have they already had a contingency fund? Have they already spent it, and therefore they need another $35,000 on top of that? Or are we just paying the $35,000 without dipping into the contingency fund?
Mr. Yucatel, looks like they're all looking at you.
So a little background on this project. If you remember the Judge Holland lawsuit, or the Judge Holland decision came out in early December. At that point, we were planning on using marine pasture fees. So before we were completely done with the design, we moved money from marine pasture fees to dock fund or dock fees. So it was somewhat of a wag to say we went in with a $150,000, that was our vision. That was what we said we would want to pay for this new and quirky identifiable visitor center. So that was done kind of as a stopgap measure because of the Judge Holland decision. We wanted to move forward. We felt that we were safe in using dock funds for that project as opposed to marine pasture fees. So we went in and moved $200,000 into the project. So that was a $200,000 best guess at that time. So that was the budget, and the bids came in a little bit higher than 150. We had five local contractors. Low bid was 164. So in the meantime, we've just had additional cost of unknown site conditions, plus there was additional costs to the Jensen Yorba lot, now Jensen Yorba Wall. Corey Wall is the architect of record, that these additional costs were for construction administration and finalization of the drawing. So there was additional monies needed on top of that $200,000, which was, in retrospect, if I look back, I would have said I would have just transferred more than $50,000. At the time, it seemed like it was a safe bet, and we just need additional CA contract administration services. There's the cost of my staff that gets billed out, and then the unknown site conditions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yucatel. Mr. Jones.
So if I understand the numbers right, we transferred money around, and you ended up with $200,000 for the project. The bid was around $164,000. And if we approve this, the total cost is going to be $235,000. Is that what I understand?
Yes.
So that's $71,000 above the initial bid of $164,000. If we go to $235,000.
Correct, but it is not all construction. There's design services and my staff times and inspection services. So there's other costs in addition to construction.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Jones, are you done?
Yes, I am. I maintain my objection.
All right. Anybody else have any questions or objections? Okay, seeing and hearing none, we do have an objection. Madam Clerk, could you please call?
Madam Mayor.
Yes. Mr. Ms. Hughes Candy.
May I ask a question prior to the roll being called? So in a scenario like this, because I don't think I've experienced that in my very short tenure, if they're requesting an appropriation from their own fund balance and that fails, this project is already underway. We've already started that, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So in that scenario, what would be...
Mr. Yucatel.
So if,
or
the
Mr. Manager.
If the Assembly didn't approve it, I would just tell them to go pound sand and they can sue us.
Okay, Mr. Manager.
I think what would happen is all work on the project would halt, and the project would have to, the expenditures would have to be limited to the amount appropriated. So we would have an unfinished building. The windows wouldn't get put in. The construction fence might stay. The bricks wouldn't go back in. So the, I guess from a high level, we can't expend public funds without appropriation. So it would not get completed. And exactly what that would look like would not be presentable.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any other questions before we go to a vote? Okay. Madam Clerk, you note the roll, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So for the ordinance 2018-11-AJ, as amended, Mr. Edwardson.
Yes.
Mr. Bryson.
Yes.
Ms. Becker.
Yes.
Ms. Glebczewski.
Yes.
Ms. Hale.
Yes.
Ms. Hughes Scandies.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
No.
Ms. Treem.
Yes.
Mayor Weldon.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, so that, thank you, Mr. Yucatel. That brings us to item E. Madam Clerk, when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2018-11-AK. An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $175,000 as supplemental funding for Waste Management's fiscal year 2019 operating budget. Funding provided by Waste Management's fund balance.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
Increased public use of the Waste Management Program has resulted in higher operational costs that require supplemental funding of $175,000 in fiscal year 19. The CBJ Junk Vehicle Disposal Program, operated by Channel Construction, saw an 84% increase in vehicles surrendered to date for fiscal year 19, and we expect to see similarly higher usage April through June. $100,000 is requested to keep this program working for the remainder of FY19. The recycling program contract with Capital Disposal, Inc., has experienced increased shipping costs, and as a result of global market pressures, revenue from the sale of recyclable material is down $75,000 from the prior year. Both these programs are important to keeping Juneau clean and extending the remaining life of the landfill. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Are there any member of the public that wishes to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move that the Assembly approve Ordinance 2018-11-AK and would like to ask a couple of questions.
Certainly.
I know that on our agenda there is discussion of junk vehicles. I had a following up on an email that we got from a citizen that said he'd had a junk car in his neighborhood for a couple months. Spent a considerable amount of time talking with the attorney, and he said that the police department was having an awful lot of junk vehicles on the streets in public places. How does that comport with this, which says more and more vehicles are being turned in voluntarily? Are we still not, reaching enough people? I mean, if we reached everybody that leaving their cars for the police to impound, would this triple? Would this double? Where are we at? I mean, I understand that we're going to have to pay for this because a lot are being turned in. But it seems like if we're that far under, and yet citizens are still complaining about junk vehicles in their neighborhoods, where are we going to end up?
Okay, Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, I would suggest that we take that up under the staff report because I think there's a fairly lengthy conversation. We certainly need the appropriation ordinance or the supplemental appropriating ordinance to keep the program running the final 2 months of the fiscal year. But there are a number of things that make jump cars more complicated and more interesting than just this appropriation ordinance. So if that's okay, I would ask that we take up that whole staff report because it entails much more than what's in this ordinance.
Thank you. Then I would ask unanimous consent.
All right, Mr. Edwardson.
My question's answered. Thank you.
All right. Any other? Ms. Glaszewski?
Just the calling it the waste management program and waste management. I don't know what else you call it, but there's a company called Waste Management, so it's confusing. Just FYI for the future. Waste management, department, waste management. Anyway, blah, blah. That's all. I have no objection.
All right. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so moved. Okay, item. Madam Clerk.
Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2018-11-Q, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $23,992 as funding for various capital improvement projects and bond debt, funding provided by general obligation bond interest income.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $23,992.23 in bond interest income that was earned on general obligation bond proceeds. Per CBJ charter and direction of bond council, the interest income is available to 1) cover original project's expenditures, 2) pay bond debt service and IRS arbitration fees, or 3) other eligible capital improvement projects. The proposed expenditures are in compliance with the guidance and are recommended as follows. Gastineau Elementary renovation CIP $1,332.83 to bond debt. Eagle Crest Learning Center CIP $203.50 to bond debt. Centennial Hall renovation CIP $191.32 to bond debt. Diamond Park Aquatic Center loop field repair $3,033.40 to bond debt. Waterfront Seawalk 2 CIP $13,430.24 to bond debt. And restrooms paving and concession CIP $1,233.30 to the project. New terminal renovation CIP $4,567.64 to the project. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2018-11-Q and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so moved. Brings us to item G, Madam Clerk.
Madam Mayor. Oh,
excuse me, Mr. Mann.
Can we have a 1 minute at ease? I think we have another typo.
Okay, we have 2 minutes at ease.
2 minute at ease. Better. Thank you.
1 minute at ease isn't a break.
On the next morning edition, are President Trump's sanctions against Cuba tough enough to change the government?
It just isn't going to have the political consequences that they hope that it will have.
Also, a new NPR podcast uncovers lies about a murder in Alabama in 1965.
I think they killed a man on the way to Birmingham.
Listen for all kinds of stories on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Morning edition starts at 4 a.m. on KTOO Juno 104.3.
programming is supported by Alaska Graphics, showcasing businesses and organizations through on-screen advertising at Gross Alaska Movie Theaters, including animation, video, and optional audio. Information on advertising on the big screen at akonscreen.com.
Support comes from Ron's Apothecary, Juno's Compounding Pharmacy since 1978, and Foodland Pharmacy, located inside of Foodland IGA, offering 24/7 prescription refills online or via mobile with the Ron's Apothecary Shop mobile app. Information and download at ronsapothecary.com.
You're tuned to KTOO Juno, and tonight partly cloudy with a low around 42. Tomorrow, a 10% chance of rain after 4 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 60. Wednesday, rain mainly before 4 p.m., high near 53. Thursday, a chance of rain between 10 and 4, cloudy with a high near 54. We've been listening to the live broadcast of the assembly meeting of the City and Borough of Juneau. They're on a quick 2 minute at ease. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Operate. Thank you, Madam Clerk. You ready, Mr. Manager?
Madam Mayor, this ordinance will appropriate to the school district a fiscal year 20 operating budget of $87,171,500. This is an overall decrease in the budget of $70,300 from the fiscal year 19 amended budget. School district operating budget is general operations $71,122,800, special revenue including pupil transportation and food service $7,063,500, restricted education grants $5,728,700, student activities and other programs $3,256,500. Fiscal year 20 school budget is supported with a combination of funding sources, including CBJ local funding of $27,874,300. Local funding consists of $26,497,800 for general operations and $1,376,500 for programs and activities outside of the state funding cap. These programs and activities include $1,181,500 for student activities, $50,000 for pupil transportation, $50,000 for food service, and $95,000 for community schools. General operations support is a decrease of $37,500 over FY19 amended. The other programs and activities funding is a decrease of $180,000 over fiscal year 19 amended for a net funding decrease of $217,500. Packet page 68 and 69, regrettably, we have two typos that I would like to call your attention to. The manager's report, the numbers are correct, but there are two numbers in the ordinance that are not. On packet page 68, two-thirds the way down the page, total estimated funding sources should read $87,171,500. The packet has $87,371,500. That is incorrect. The correct number is $87,171,500. That same error is duplicated at the top of packet page 69 on the total appropriation. Again, the correct number is $87,171,500. This ordinance was introduced, the original ordinance was introduced at the April 3, 2019 special assembly meeting and referred to the Assembly Finance Committee for deliberation. On April 24, 2019, a special assembly meeting was held to hear public comment and for the assembly to state by motion the amount of local funding to be provided to the school district. The Assembly Finance Committee approved and moved the B version of this ordinance back to the full assembly for action at its May 8, 2019 meeting. Charter requires adoption by May 31, 2019. I recommend you amend this ordinance as discussed and adopt it.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that wishes to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move it back to the Assembly. Ms. Gladyszewski.
I would move to amend Ordinance 2019-07B on page 68 of 76 with the total estimated funding sources to say 87,171,500. And on the next page, 69, for the total appropriation to be 87,171,500.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so move. Come back to you, Ms. Blaszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd move Ordinance 2019-07B with the amendment, and I have a question.
All right. What's your question?
Thank you. So we do this every year. The charter requires it to that we adopt this by May 31. And usually we know we have more confidence in what the state's going to do than we do this year. So the question is, this says appropriating funds from the Treasury. It's appropriating hopeful funds we hope to have in the Treasury. So how does that work?
All right.
Because it says on page 68, it does say estimated revenue, state support. But anyway, you can talk.
Mr. Palmer.
Thank you. I will tag team this one with Mr. Bartholomew. There's a couple parts to this, and Mr. Bartholomew can talk to the practical implications as to how we actually get money from the state and where it goes. But as Ms. Gladyszewski noted, the ordinance appropriates funds for the school district to spend, and the ordinance does describe that we estimate they're coming in from the sources that are identified in here, and pursuant to the charter, we would be required to spend no more than what's identified in each one of those buckets. And Mr. Bartholomew can describe the practical reasons as to why it's described as the Treasury.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you. The way by our charter, we have a central treasury. So all the funds that flow in and out of the city, whether it's enterprise fund, the school district, or core government, we flow that all through a central treasury. So if the state is providing funding, or the federal government's providing funding, or grant funding, or our tax funding, they flow through the central treasury. How we manage and enforce the ordinances are when the assembly authorizes an expenditure. So in this case, the total number, of the authorized expenditures is $87 million. And then we have individual funding sources. And so the accountants work with the budget folks in the various organizations, and they have to track their revenues. And if we expect to not receive enough revenues to fund the expenditures, they have two choices. They either have to reduce their expenditures or come back to the assembly and ask for another type of funding source. Generally, they're coming and asking for general government revenue, but it could be, we'd have to look at what the options are. But in this case, under the example, if the state of Alaska dramatically reduced or did not pass a budget, the school district has the authority to be able to spend their federal revenue and their local government revenue and obviously be coming up with a strategy or a plan for what are we going to do. They would start the year, and there would be lots of discussions before we start the year, but that would be the approach, is as soon as they were aware of a major revenue shortfall, we'd be meeting with them and talking about how do we do that. And so the original expenditures that came out of the general fund, if we didn't receive any state support, would be coming from local revenue or federal revenue if it was still eligible. And then we would have to come up with a plan.
All right, Mr. Manager, do you want to speak?
Madam Mayor, my reading of the charter is the manager would be required to come back to the assembly for action, and the manager can't spend monies that don't exist. So there is required to be an appropriation to spend the money, but the money also has to be there. So the manager would be required to come back to the assembly before dispersing those funds if they didn't materialize.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Manager. Ms. Glashevsky.
So thank you, Madam Mayor. Just for the attorney, in the ordinance, it doesn't, it says estimated revenue. I get that. But it says appropriation, $87 million. So where is the bright line that says we didn't appropriate $87 million, right? I mean, and normally it doesn't matter because I trust it all, but now I don't, right?
Mr. Palmer.
Sure. So the actions going on up the hill with the state budget are definitely causing some amount of uncertainty. As the manager just described, though, Charter Section 9.13 provides that, and I'm going to read it, provide clarity here. No payment may be, this is Section 9.13A, no payment may be made and no obligation incurred against any appropriation unless the manager ascertains that there is a sufficient unencumbered balance in the appropriation and that sufficient funds are or will be available to cover the obligation. And so if you read the charter, that provision in context with this ordinance, we're estimating that we're getting the money from these various sources, including a significant amount from the state. The appropriation authorizes the spending. If that money comes in, fine. If it doesn't, then we're in the options that Mr. Bartholomew described.
Okay. Thank you for that section. That gives me, that's helpful.
Any further questions? You made the motion correct.
I did, Madam Mayor.
Okay.
I ask for unanimous consent.
Yes. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so moved. And just a quick thank you to Mr. Holst and Mr. Kelly for the school board of the audience, as well as our school district employees. All right, that moves us to item H. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-15, an ordinance authorizing the manager to amend the wireless communications site lease with Vertical Bridge S3 Assets, LLC at 3000 Jackson Road.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
Vertical Bridge has requested to lease an additional 144 square feet from the CBJ. This lease will provide space for additional ground equipment to utilize open space on an existing tower. This lease amendment will update the contact information, extend the lease by adding an additional lease term of 5 years, and update the rent schedule to include increased rent for an additional sub-lessee. Lands Committee passed a unanimous motion of support for the lease amendment at its January 14, 2019 meeting. Planning Commission reviewed the lease amendment on April 23, 2019 and had no comments for the Assembly. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Bryson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2019-15, authorizing the manager to amend the wireless communication site with Vertical Bridge S3 Assets, and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so moved. Okay, with that, I think we will take a break, so let's come back at 20 after.
You're tuned to KTOO Juno. The time is 8:09, and you've been listening to the live broadcast of the assembly meeting for the City and Borough of Juneau. They've gone on a break until 20 after. So we will listen to some music and wait for that to happen. Let's see if I can come up with a weather forecast. So it looks like the weather for tonight is partly cloudy with a low around 42. And tomorrow is a 10% chance of rain after 5 p.m. and mostly cloudy with a high near 60. And then for Wednesday, rain mainly before 5 p.m., a high near 53.
I heard her voice.
I just heard a voice coming from somewhere. Let me try and reconnect you. Hold
sitting
on.
At the pool.
I was about to say, it must be very challenging to do an assembly member meeting by the pool.
I'm not actually by the pool. It's too loud out there.
So. Oh, darn. Okay.
And we can actually hear you on the... We've lost Miss Hughes' scannies, but I'm sure she'll find her way back. Well, bring us back to order. So we're on new business.
Madam Mayor, I don't have any unfinished business either.
Okay. Well, it was blank, so you had no changes to the agenda, so I assumed you had no unfinished business. So, new business. Mr. Manager.
The Aquatics Board is required to review and approve a schedule of fees and charges for use of the aquatic facilities at least annually. The Aquatics Board approved the attached schedule of fees at its meeting on January 22, 2019, and the fees are scheduled to take effect on July 1, 2019. Pursuant to 6710.090B, the Assembly, by motion or resolution, may change any fee or charge approved by the Aquatics Board. Staff is available for questions, and public participation is allowed on this item. I recommend the Assembly move this item with orders of the day.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any public testimony on this item? All right. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move orders of the day.
Any objections? Ms. Hughes-Candies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would like to object just for a question if there's an aquatic staff or board member.
Looks like they're coming in tandem, although only one of them has skin in the game.
Not this voice. I just found like
it. Please state your name for the record.
Colin Monahan.
Ms. Hughes-Gandies.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. I had a question about looking at the attachment of which fees were increasing. Oh, thank you. The sponsored community swim, and that was one that was increased by 63%, and I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So for our 1.5-hour sponsored community swims that we offer for businesses to sponsor essentially all admission fees for all of the individuals who come into our doors, we have anywhere upwards of 8 staff members all the way up to 16 staff members on. And that's, so if we have 200 people in the pool, we by law have to have 12 guards on at one time, and then we have 4 other staff members to kind of help facilitate, you know, staging for the next open swim, running the slides, and then just essentially making sure that we have enough staff members to cater to 200 individuals. So that's really just for personnel costs.
Thank you. And follow up?
Yes.
Is that widely taken advantage of? Do you feel like you are not taken advantage of, but is that pretty well used? Do you have businesses doing that frequently throughout the year?
Yeah. So my goal is I try to get it, you know, once a month from a different business, but this year has been a little bit harder to do that. But yeah, that's the initial goal.
Great. Thank you.
Any more questions?
Not for me.
Okay. Orders of the day, so moved. All right, that brings us to... I'm sorry, you're pointing at something. Ms. Cosgrove.
But not on this. You're moving on.
Okay, Mr. Manager, you're confusing us.
I'm
are we done with the new business? And we're moving on to staff report. Okay. Thank you. Ms. Cosgrove, would you please talk to us about junk impound vehicles?
Madam Mayor, I would be ecstatic to. So we're actually, Mr. Palmer and I are going to tag team on this one a little bit, try to give you answer maybe perhaps Mr. Jones's question or give you a little bit of background. There has been some email traffic coming through on this, which I'm sure you all have seen, and the answer is yes, there are a few more vehicles than normal that would be tagged and hauled, but right now there simply isn't room to remove them from the streets and put them in the impound lot. So. For those of you who do not know, JPD has an impound lot. It's out in the Lemon Creek area. It's designed for 100 vehicles. They regularly get in close to 200 by packing things in super tight, and in fact, that's the shape that it's in now. They literally do not have the space to move more vehicles in. Over the last three calendar years, they have impounded a little over 2,100 vehicles. And impounds come in for a variety of different reasons. Some of them come in as holds. Some of them come in as abandoned vehicles. Some of them are come in for evidence. And then there's a broader category they call safekeeping. So not all vehicles in the pen come because they've been abandoned someplace, but they may actually take a car and move it to the lot if they're interacting with an individual whom they believe either shouldn't be driving that car or shouldn't be driving, period. Once it's impounded, there's a few ways that it can go back out of the lot over time. So of those 2,100 vehicles over the last 3 years, they have auctioned some of those vehicles, about 250. About 500 of them have been disposed of. So think of the Skookum process. And almost 1,300 of them were released back to their owners, and there were 40 of them that were kept for miscellaneous purposes. As you have no doubt been exposed to or remember from previous conversations along this topic, it is difficult when a vehicle is abandoned. There's a lengthy process that JPD has to go through before they can get to the auction and disposal process. They do that as quickly as possible. In the past, they've had a couple of vehicle auctions a year. They have begun experimenting with online auction, which it looks like it's going to assist. So as an example, since March, they've held three online auctions. They've actually been able to move some vehicles and then tag others for disposal. So they're hoping that that process will help take some pressure off the lot. But until there is some pressure taken off the lot, they have to be somewhat... I was going to say picky. That's probably not quite the right word about adding to their current congestion problem. So they are moving through it quickly, and Mr. Palmer has some additional information as well sort of on this topic.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Manager. Mr. Attorney.
Thank you. I have been working with JPD, as have some of the other attorneys in my office, for the last year to look at ways to streamline some of the different processes for moving vehicles, and as Ms. Cosgrove described, there are some police evidentiary reasons why vehicles are held. There are some impound reasons, so associated with a crime like a driving with a license revoked or driving under the influence of alcohol or other drugs, and we have a little bit of discretion on those. There are also vehicles that are junked, and there are also vehicles that are abandoned, and there's a relatively straightforward process for junked vehicles. It's a little bit more tedious for abandoned vehicles because the idea is that you want to try to find the owner. And so I've been working with JPD to figure out if there's other opportunities to make those different processes as quick as possible, and if there's other ideas for maybe looking at ways to minimize the number of vehicles that we're moving to an impound lot. I will also say that we have... The city has been engaged in a land use enforcement action with a particular property on river, let's just say in back of the valley. And that particular property owner is or was one of the towing businesses in town, and for reasons that we don't quite know, but was storing large numbers of vehicles, upwards of 200 vehicles on that property in a low-density residential zone. The Community Development Department has attempted to help that person understand our laws and become in compliance, and that person has refused. And so one of the examples is that we gave an enforcement order that required that a certain number of vehicles be removed per month. That did not occur. And so without any change in behavior and continued vehicles being brought to that property, we actually filed a lawsuit against that individual a few weeks ago, and that individual just provided an answer. So we're in the early stages of that lawsuit, and the goal ultimately is to get that person to comply with the land use laws in Juneau and remove all of the essentially the junkyard vehicles that are there and any of the vehicles that are being used and associated with it a commercial purpose and stop towing vehicles to that property. And we will provide you updates as we go forward. But it's, as Ms. Cosgrove described, the junk impounded abandoned vehicles process in Juneau right now is a little bit challenging. And I think in short, there's a large number of vehicles that are ending up in low value conditions, and people are either getting creative or struggling to figure out what to do with them.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Ms. Glashevsky.
No question. Just to be clear, so people understand, if they have a car that they no longer want, and they can bring it to Skookum, and they don't have to pay any money.
And it's registered.
Just want to make it clear that's what they should be doing.
Mr. Marinder.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Deputy Mayor is correct. We have a CBJ program where we contract with Skookum Recycling, and if you have a car that is at its end of life, if you take it to Skookum, they will accept it and dispose of it, scrap it for free. You have to be the registered owner of that vehicle. And I would say that in order for us not to accumulate junk cars in the community, we generally need to be disposing of 500, 700 cars a year. That many new cars come in, roughly. And I would say that it appears that the demographic age of our vehicles is, we're on the longer end. We have a lot more than it feels like we had 5 years ago. It's hard, it's a little hard to know, but we do have a lot of cars in the community. And we're definitely trying to figure out how to get rid of the cars that need to be disposed of on all fronts.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Jones?
Thank you. Is it about a year ago that police department moved to the Lemon Creek area? They had an impound lot out near the airport, correct? Are they still using that lot? So they have two lots, or are they only using the one at Lemon Creek?
Through the chair, we have only the lot in Lemon Creek. The lot at the airport was used for auction, and it is no longer available to us.
Okay. Second question is, the property that Skookum leases is up for sale, as Skookum, has been asked to find another place. Have they? We know what's happening there. And I guess then the follow-up is, do we have land that could deal both Skookum and the impound lot and expand the capacity of both?
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, so I have been approached by a representative, the owner of the property that Skookum currently occupies, knowing that they may need a location. And that person asked if we would work with Skookum, and I said absolutely. It was an important service. And we generally looked at some of our undeveloped gravel resources back behind the Costco area as possibly a suitable location. So we anticipate that if that property sells in short order, we will be working on a lease arrangement. With regard to consolidating the impound and the junk car activities, they're kind of distinct. The cars in the impound lot are not affirmatively ready for recycling or disposal. They may still hold value for those property owners, and they need to be kept in a secure location. Years back, we did lease a couple of spaces in town, and the spaces that we leased from the private sector, rents started going up because they started having break-in problems on those lots and did not desire us as a tenant. So it feels like about 15 years ago, we built the bridge across Lemon Creek and built the impound lot adjacent to the jail, which is in a good, secure location and protects us from claims from the owners of those impounded vehicles of damage or theft.
Mr. Jones?
Second question, I guess. When the police department, within the last year, came before us to talk about this, and they talked about the laws and the ordinances, mm-hmm. I know the attorney's been working with the police department to shorten that time frame. I think there was some discussion of it in 3 months. 4 months from the time they might impound a vehicle that they got title so they could dispose of it. I know the attorney says he's been working on that. We also talked about whether it would be beneficial or not to increase the fines or the recovery costs. And I know that there's something in the ordinances about how much we can fine an individual if they abandon their vehicle and we have to tow it. And I was just wondering if you all had looked at that in addition as Ms. Glashevsky said, if we want to encourage people to turn it in for free, if they don't turn it in for free, it's going to cost them a hell of a lot more money. And I was just wondering where, if at any place, you were in that discussion.
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, so the question of what's the most effective approach for and getting cars, vehicles economically disposed of, and whether more stick or more carrot might be most effective. We have some ideas on how to possibly incentivize people to deliver the cars. If we gave them a small financial incentive to deliver the car, that would be much less costly than having our police resources chasing people and having our people putting fines or charges on them. So I would welcome that discussion at a committee of the whole at a future date. I think that's a really good topic.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Manager. Mr. Bryson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I like it. Turn in your junk car for $50. Holy smokes, that would they'd go find them for us, Mr. Manager. So I had two kind of connected questions. How many junked vehicles that didn't go through the abandoned or the impound lot that were just straight junk vehicles, how many junk vehicles happened last year, and have they made any progress on when vehicles are abandoned onto private property, which is probably the most problematic aspect of junk cars?
Okay, Ms. Fosbrook.
According to JPD, they gave me their stats. Last year, it looks like they took possession of 168 abandoned vehicles. In 2017, it was 185, and in 2016, it was 110. So it's looking like a number that's climbing slightly. That the problem, of course, with abandoned vehicles, it's a much lengthier process for us to dispose of them because of the DMV process. I believe it's a 6-month waiting period after we try to find the owner before we can actually do something with it. A lot of those vehicles don't have auction value. A lot of them just make their way straight for disposal.
I'm sorry, I may not have asked the question correctly. I was looking for just the junk vehicles that they were able to bring to Skookum for free when a citizen said, my vehicle doesn't work anymore. Do we have a number on citizens that were able to take advantage of that?
Oh, you're asking when the citizen takes it?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have that number?
Looks like Mr. Vigu would like a seat.
Come on up, Mr.
At the
Vigu.
Microphone.
I have a few numbers for you. I don't have a complete number for 19, obviously, because we're not done yet. But in fiscal year 17, there were 350 vehicles brought to Skookum. In 18, 392. And through March of 19, 493.
Wow.
So we still have April, May, and June left in the fiscal year.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Vigu. Ms. Becker.
Just a question for what you just said. Thank you, Madam Mayor. You said brought to Skookum by whom?
By owners of the vehicle. As a city manager said, when you bring your vehicle to Skookum, you have to fill out a form that says
so that's
that
not an
it's
abandoned
your vehicle.
Vehicle.
It's not an abandoned vehicle.
No.
Junk.
But does the city pick up abandoned vehicles and take them to Skookum, or is it just the police?
Ms. Cosgrove, we'll pick on you.
Yeah, I'll attempt to answer that, and the city manager can jump in. So we don't have a service that goes and picks up junked vehicles. It's basically the police tag them and have them towed at this point. That's part of what we do. So the numbers that I provided you, the 2,100 over the last 3 years, and I didn't add up probably about 500 plus of those were abandoned vehicles that they took from either private property or public property or wherever they were abandoned and attempted to find the owner and or auction and or dispose of them as the process allowed them to. It's a relatively onerous process.
All right. Well, this sounds like a pretty heavy topic, and the Madam Deputy Mayor is anxiously looking forward to seeing this at the Committee of the Whole.
Yes, Madam Mayor, absolutely.
Yeah. Ms. Hale, do you want to sneak a question in there?
It's a complicated topic.
It's a good topic. As one of those several hundred cars that were taken to Skookum, one of those was my car, which died, as we knew it would. And I had just forgotten until actually this conversation that great free service is actually sponsored by CBJ. And I didn't realize it, even though I took a car there and filled out the paperwork. So maybe we need to somehow make people more aware. And I drove it there because the mechanic who told us you cannot drive this car told us where to take it. But otherwise, you know, I don't think it just didn't register.
Thank you for that free advertising for the city.
You got it.
Service.
Madam Mayor, I was just going to ask that our financial director could go ahead and create the bill and hand it. Give it to me, because it's
awesome. No, the service is free, Ms. Becker.
Services paid for by
the cars were abandoned. There you go. So, okay, well, we're going to move on and see this later at a cow. So, supplement agreement, Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, a supplemental agreement is a type of procurement that is authorized at certain dollar amounts for the manager and certain dollar amounts for the assembly. It is by nature, it's a no bid. Procurement and can be done under limited circumstances. The airport has asked me for approval of a $84,000, $750 supplemental agreement to their nearly $9 million runway safety area project that's underway. The project is it's additional paving on the apron. Practice is to bid things all the time and in very limited circumstances do supplemental agreements. When the manager authorizes one, the manager is required to notify the assembly at the next assembly meeting of that action. In terms of economy, there are good reasons to do this. The asphalt plant is the only asphalt plant that we have going in town. It's set up at the airport. Our asphalt company, they're set up at the airport. They're already inside the fence. But the compelling reason on this is a safety reason. Airport staff had put recycled asphalt in a particular area, but it's not stayed compacted, and they are having loose debris on the airfield, posing a safety hazard to aviation. So for that reason, I have approved their supplemental agreement to CECON for additional paving for $84,750. And that is the end of my report on that topic.
Any questions? Ms. Hughes Candies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So just to summarize, to make sure I understand the sort of compelling reason for approving it, is that it's an immediate health and safety risk. essentially?
Essentially. So the code requires that the manager find a public interest finding detailed. Ms. Watto, the airport manager, has written me a memo detailing that in this instance.
Thank you.
Any further questions? I'll have one. So why is it an immediate health and safety list when it wasn't before? Because this is an additional airport apron park paving.
Ms. Watto was
it wasn't beforehand. Ms. But Watto, now all of a sudden we decided it was and we have to pave it.
Ms. Watto is certainly expert on the details of timing of this.
Thank you. Good evening.
Ms. Watto.
So this area is between the airport terminal east end where the jets park and coastal helicopters, which is a very narrow area. It's one of the few areas, besides the one that they're paving right now next to Tempsco, that is not paved. It was a snow storage area for a while, but as everything is expanding between the overnight jets and coastal helicopters, we're not even paving the whole area. We're paving the part that we feel is a safety issue right now with helicopters and flying debris that they could ingest in the engine or hit humans as they start up their engines. So that's why we had tried to put in the reclaimed asphalt paving to try and mitigate that, and it is not working, so we need to react on it now. The section that is not getting paved, we're actually holding out until we do apron work in about 5 or 6 years because we feel that that would be fine to wrap into the rest of the pavement or the apron work at that time. So this is just the immediate area where the helicopters can blow debris.
All right, thank you. Any further questions? All right, what do you need for us on this, Mr. Manager?
I just have a duty to report when I've authorized this.
All right. Thank you for reporting. Thank you, Ms. Watto. All right. Anything further for staff reports?
No further staff reports. Thank you.
All right. Well, that will bring us to assembly reports. And I will start with the mayor's report. First of all, happy belated Mother's Day for everybody. And hopefully all the mothers had a relaxing day. And congratulations to the UAS's class of 2019 on their commencements. And I was able to attend a dinner at UAS to honor their, and I believe you were there too, to honor their meritorious service and honorary doctorate awards. I was also able to attend a neighborhood meeting for Glacier View Trailer Park. That was quite interesting. And a meeting about the stakeholders at Centennial Hall and gaining comments and ideas about how to move forward with anything that we want to renovate there. I went to a, for lack of better terms, tourism capacity meeting at Elizabeth Bradovich Hall. Saw a couple of you there. I was able to attend the pillar speaker for Keegan Randall, the Olympic gold medals winner and a cancer survivor, and she gave a great speech, and she's an awesome individual, so if anybody gets a chance to see her, it's well worth your time. I was also able to attend the Junior Olympics in swimming up in Anchorage, and a little shout-out to Spencer Holt, who broke 2 state records during the meet, so good job for Spencer.
Nice.
And I was able to attend a Look Local First event at the General Radio Center, and thank you to Richard and Sharon Burns' generosity from donating $150,000 of advertising to the Look Local First campaign. And today, Mr. Manager and Irene Gallion, our homeless coordinator, went to the Thunder Mountain High School AP statistics class and looked at how they compiled their numbers for homelessness and housing first. And it was very interesting, and it pretty much went with how the other agencies compiled the statistics. So as some of you know, I spoke at the Blessing of the Fleet and Reading of the Names and a couple upcoming events to put on your calendar. This weekend is Southeast Regionals for track at the Thunder Mountain High School track, but it's for both high schools, and all the Southeast teams will be here. And tomorrow, we welcome for the first time in Juneau the Norwegian cruise liner, the Joy. And also, for, as I said earlier, the Home Build at 2 o'clock is presenting their certifications for their ICC certification. So with that, that's my mayor's report. We'll go to the assembly reports, starting with Mr. Bryson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I don't believe I was as busy as you, ma'am. All right. On the 23rd of April, I witnessed Officer Quinto. I was making a donation of the Glory Hall I brought him overripe tomatoes. And I watched Officer Quinto playing cards in the glory hole, and I didn't know if there was a way that we as assembly members could recognize staff of the city when we see them go above and beyond. And the guy was sitting there just, he was being part of their world for just a little bit. I was very impressed, and the individual that he was playing cards with seemed to be very engaged with him, and I didn't know if there was a way that we could recognize Officer Quinto for that. But then later on that night, the Planning Commission, they also approved, they discussed the vertical bridge lease, Title 43. We had a wonderful presentation from Assemblymember Jones about removing the Planning Commission from lease reviews for efficiency. On the 29th, I was at a my day job conference. I got to see a presentation by the state economist Neil Fried. Juneau is now the fifth largest city in Alaska. When I moved up here, it was the third largest. Alaska no longer has a wage premium. We no longer get paid more than they get paid down south. And we just experienced the first quarter of growth after the longest recession in the state's history. Those were the highlights from the economist discussion. On the 4th, I went to the UAS nurse pinning ceremony, where the 12 young ladies that had completed their nursing were now pinned. On the 6th, I met with Connie of AELMP. We were discussing more of the Juneau Hydro Project. On the 7th, I also went to the Look Local First event put on by the Radio Center. This marked the 10th anniversary, and the first year that Look Local First came on, the then-sitting city manager, Rod Swope, credited the Look Local First campaign with balancing the city budget. They were expecting a shortfall and ended up. So yay to the Look Local First campaign, helping us pay our bills. That night at the I went to Parks and Rec Advisory Committee. They had a presentation on invasive species, and the Aquatics Board goes to the 9 members on July 1st. Met with Kirby Day on the 8th, but also the Blood Bank of Alaska. They have a new office here. Some of you guys have been in the new office. Bartlett does not get their blood from Alaska. They get their blood from Washington, and they're putting the bug in our ear, and that contract is up in 2 years, and Blood Bank of Alaska is interested in being the provider for Alaskan blood. On the 9th, to continue my Juneau Hydro Project, I had a conversation with Keith and Duff, and then just the other day, I was walking downtown, and I saw what Deckhand Dave did. We approved it. Dave built it. I was very proud. If you have not seen that corner yet, he has done the city a service by, he really did a great job getting that area set up for the tourist. That is my report, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Brazen. Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And I wandered by while Deckhand Dave was setting up, and it was looking great, and I congratulated him, and he thanked the assembly. So that was very cool. I agree. I have not been quite so busy, so I'll be very brief. The Public Works Committee continues to hold special Public Works Committee meetings about the new JAC, and we've digressed slightly into actually doing essentially a needs assessment or an improvements assessment for Centennial Hall that the mayor mentioned. So MRV Architects is doing that. And the reason that we kind of did that digression is that after the first couple of meetings about the new JAC project, it became very obvious that that project had, in a sense, been saddled with trying to deal with Centennial Hall needs, but nobody had done any scoping of those needs. So that's what this is. And so we've got several, there's a follow-up meeting on May 30th that MRV Architects is going to do, and then I'll be touching on what the status of that project is at the regular Public Works Committee meetings. And then on June 25th, we'll have a special Public Works meeting kind of summing everything up about what we've learned about the new JAC and Centennial Hall. And I'm expecting that to go to the Committee of the Whole on July 1st. I'll talk with you, Ms. Gladczewski. So that's kind of where we're at with the new JAC project and, you know, what we might do with that. I think basically we're kind of just getting information, and then we'll bring it to the full assembly to make some decisions on. Jay Cost, the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, continues to work very hard and keep me very busy. Bartlett, we met on the 23rd of April. I've also been talking with a friend, a citizen who lives near a problem house, and so I've been talking with various people with the city and talking to him, and I think we might be hearing a draft ordinance soon that might help with that. It's been very, very difficult for him. He's got a family just right across the street from a difficult house. And then as the first cruise ships were coming in, I had quite a few conversations with various people about which ones were smoking versus which ones were not smoking at all. So it was very exciting to see them not smoke at all and then also to note which ones were smoking. So I think people are continuing to watch that, and I'm very interested in that.
Thank you, Ms. Hale. Ms. Hughes-Gandy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. At some point along the line, I don't know dates, I attended the Downtown Business Association meeting. The city manager attended and made a presentation on downtown City Hall. They were very interested in that. It was a good presentation. Mr. Rogers came to that as well. They're working on their funding priorities and priorities in general for the year and getting ready for their annual meeting. There was not a Commission on Aging meeting between now and the last time I saw you. I attended the Blessing of the Fleet, which was very moving. I helped out later that day with the Maritime Festival. That was a lot of fun. We had good turnout considering the weather. I attended the open house on the new ferry, the Taslina. I've never been on a ferry that smelled new. It's a great boat. Hope they keep that ferry system running. Really beautiful. And then this last weekend, I had the opportunity to attend Becoming an Outdoor Woman camp that's put on by Fish and Game. And I just want to give a plug that if you ever get the chance to go, because it's pretty fun. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes-Gandy's. Ms. Treem, do we still have you?
I'm still here.
Would you like to give your report?
I would love to. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have not attended a Travel Juneau meeting since our last regular assembly meeting, but we've heard about their Centennial Hall work and the meeting that they held, or the meeting that was held about Centennial Hall and its needs. I attended an Aquatics Board meeting on April 23rd. They are working on their annual report, and I've seen some drafts of that in my email go back and forth, so we should be receiving that shortly. Let's see, on the 28th, I greeted the first large cruise ship. I think I said welcome to Juneau about 300 times and impressed some people with my T-shirt wearing, but I was standing in direct sunlight. Let's see, it's been a busy couple weeks. I was on Action Line on the 3rd and then on the 7th, Lauren and I were on Juneau Afternoon as part of Public Service Appreciation Week. I also attended the Taslina Open House and was really struck by how clean and shiny the paint was. So I hope they can keep it that way for a while. I was very moved by the mayor's speech at the Blessing of the Fleet and then helped Miss Hughes-Gandy's serve some fish at the Maritime Festival. And finally, on the 7th, I attended a day-long drought and southeast workshop put on by USDA, and it was really a fascinating workshop, fascinating to be in a room full of scientists and hear about the impacts of drought in southeast Alaska. So that is my report.
Thank you, Ms. Treem. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First thing I have is recommended board appointments. The HRC, the Human Resources Committee, met right before this meeting. The HRC recommends that the Assembly approve Brad Waldron to reappointment to the Bidding Review Board for a term beginning June 1st, 2019 and ending May 31st, 2022.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Waldron is appointed.
Thank you. And the next is the HRC recommends that the Assembly approve David Bartlett for an appointment to the Treadwell Arena Advisory Board for a term beginning June 1st, 2019, and ending May 31st, 2022.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Bartlett is appointed.
During the same meeting, we received an annual report from the Treadwell Arena Advisory Board. It was a very well done, very concise report, and I'd recommend you take a look at it if you have it. One question came up from the manager that I didn't have an answer to, so I figured I would ask at this meeting and see who I might go to for an answer. The charge that created the Treadwell Arena Advisory Board established a 50% cost recovery goal. They had a 68% cost recovery this last year and would like to raise the goal. Does the Assembly establish the cost recovery goals, or does the board establish the goal itself?
Mr. Palmer, we'll give that one to you.
I will get back to you with an answer. I don't have one available right now on that one.
Thank you. And I told them I would get back to them with an answer.
Mr. Manager, do you have anything other than get back to us too?
We'll get back to you and try and research the thinking on that.
All right. Thank you. Good question, Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you. So there are more appointments coming up to Empowered Board, so I was going to give people a list of dates along with my recommendation for dates. If people are ready to write them down, there will also be an email on the subject in case you wrote them down wrong, or in case I wrote them down wrong. The Airport Board Eagle Crest will be on the same night, and the choices are June 6th, 7th, 10th, 13th, or 26th, and I recommend the 13th.
No, 6th, 7th, 10th are no-goes. Or I guess, never mind. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I take it back.
Yeah. Is the 13th a Thursday?
It is.
Okay.
There's also the possibility of June 17th through the 21st, but that's difficult for at least one member, and the 6th and the 10th?
6th, 7th, 10th are also difficult for one member.
They are also difficult, so we know that already.
Mm-hmm. So tentatively the 13th.
I can't do the 6th. Yep.
Yeah. And then Docks and Harbors will have its own night.
What time?
What's that?
What time would that be?
What time do we usually do it?
5:30.
Okay, Docks and Harbors, 5:30. And our choices are in July the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 24th. And I recommend the 18th. And that is also a Thursday.
You recommend what did you say?
The 18th.
Of July.
Yes.
That's a Wednesday.
18th? Okay.
It's a Thursday.
No, it's a Thursday.
That's a Thursday.
Yeah.
That's fine.
The
18th.
So those are the dates, and like I said, I'll try to get an email to everybody with those dates as well. Let me see. We're meeting before the 13th, right? So June. Third, okay. So we can establish our dates for June on June 3rd.
Okay. Mr. Edwardson, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay, I'll stand a little closer to my mic. Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay, the liaison reports, Airport Board hasn't met since we've last met. Eagle Crest met on April 25th. They have some interesting stuff going on in their reports, but they're not really ready for discussion at the Assembly right now. I think they're probably pretty early in their evolution. And then the Local Emergency Planning Committee met on May 8th, and their agenda included the blood bank. Maritime Festival, the mayor allowed me to speak at the Maritime Festival, and I spoke on maritime commerce in Juneau, and nobody listened, not even my fellow Assembly members. So.
That was long.
And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Everson. I'm sure it was a great speech.
It was.
Yeah. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Finance Committee meeting. Finance Committee has been meeting, as you all are aware, since you all attend. Our next meeting is this Wednesday. And we'll do the pending list. We'll also look at the mill rate. I know there's lots of questions about that. You should have been given the brief packet tonight. Please bring your book. It has all of the backup material for all of the pending list. Was last time. We're not going to reduplicate that. So bring your book. Read it, please, so that we can have the discussions we need to have. The school district has not met. They meet tomorrow, both at 4:30 and then at 6. Alaska Municipal League Board was here last week on the 8th and 9th. Lots of discussions about their activities, as well as lots of people going to and from the legislature trying to best determine what the legislature might or might not be doing. The biggest issue for most of us was school debt reimbursement. There were some issues on crime bill, but I would say that most of the major discussion was on school debt reimbursement and school funding, both the $20 million this year and the $30 million next year. Those who visited with legislators up on the Hill did not come back any clearer in understanding, to be polite. I attended the Pedersen Hill public meeting last Thursday. Other than developers, I believe there were two people I could identify as citizens. The Empire Reporter was there to live blog it and then wrote an article. To say that it was not well received by the developers would be an understatement. It'll be interesting as to exactly what comes up, because under most of the questions about how are you going to sell lots, how are you going to do this, how are you going to do that, Mr. Cheney said the ordinances allow us to do X and the ordinances allow us to do Y, but the assembly can make changes to any of those and do what they want to do, which then response was, well, what kind of fair play is that if the major developer makes me play by the rule book but can throw the rule book out if they want? So it should be a fairly interesting time whenever we get back to Pedersen Hill. I also attended the Centennial Hall Improvement meeting. I didn't stay long. I was there at 5. I think I left by 5:35. I don't think they did a very good job explaining to me why they were there and what their task was. I found out more in talking to the city manager. They spent a lot of time talking about how wonderful that architectural firm had made Cordova look and had made Sitka look and had made so-and-so look, and it was all cosmetic on the outside. So I lost interest pretty quick. I'd be interested when the Public Works and Facility Committee meets next, and maybe on May 30th, but I didn't stick around very long. And then just a couple of comments and questions. On cost recovery, we've had a lot of discussions in my 7 years, both with Aquatics Board, Eagle Crest, Treadwell, about cost recovery. Each of those organizations computes their cost recovery differently. Each has a different formula by which they think they can recover costs. This assembly has never come to an agreement on what gets included under costs versus what gets included under expenses to come up with the cost recovery, especially when you have a full enterprise board like Eagle Crest. You can sort of count all of their dollars and all of their staff, but the way we did the Aquatics Board, some of that came out of our pocket, some of it came out of their pocket, trying to figure all that out. I don't know that this assembly has never ever formally said to a enterprise fund or a recreational, you will recover X amount. basically because it was very difficult to figure out how you would do the accounting. And so I just offer that for thought as you guys are thinking about that. Tonight we had Gaston School was going to get money back to pay the bond indebtedness. I never did hear, was the contractor dispute ever settled? Are we still arguing that out? I have never heard, and I know that when Gaston School was completed, there was a pretty significant dispute between the city and the contractor.
Mr. Manager.
Through the chair, Mr. Jones is correct. That dispute was resolved a long time ago.
Okay. Well, I never heard, so I figured I better ask. At the Pedersen Hill meeting, there was a lot of pre-discussion about Mr. Bignell's project out by the airport off Mapleston and about whether he ever got cleared with the airport, and his statement was the airport was no help. We finally found an abandoned right of way and we have a different access, but I couldn't understand quite where. Has that been resolved as far as the airport and the manager's concerned in terms of with DOT that he can develop his land and he has access?
Mr. Manager.
Through the mayor, I had heard that indirectly, and people stopped calling me asking for help in the situation, so it appears to have self-resolved.
Well, I guess I'd like to sort of know what the resolve is, because I see a lot of pipe right laying there by Mapleston, and I see an awful lot of activity going on. And he talked at that meeting about he's developing his other access, but I can't tell that anything has changed other than there's a lot of activity out there.
Madam Mayor, maybe we'll just put that as an information item on the Lands Committee when staff can pull that information together.
All right. Thank you.
That would be good. And then, as everybody was talking about things going on tomorrow at 2 o'clock, at 2 o'clock tomorrow in Douglas Cafe is Coffee with a Cop. For those of us who live on the island and that particular group of officers, I know everybody would like to go out to the school thing and do other things, but Coffee with the Cop at Douglas Cafe at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Becker.
Thank you. I'll whip through this. Seems like this was really busy. I feel like I've been out of it for a long time, so now I really have a lot to do. I don't know. Docks and Harbors had a hearing for Imelda Harbor residents, and it was pretty much unanimous that they're against the fish cleaning dock. However, Docks and Harbors has not given up, and they're going to continue to look at ways to allow something to happen out there. Campus Council meeting was today. The main thing was there's a letter that was written supporting research. Fairbanks, University of Fairbanks research. Not to have that go away, and no matter what happens to the schools. The facilities report, the school district and CPJ joint report will be finalized and discussed and hopefully approved on Friday. We're having a meeting then. The chamber has had every Thursday they have their meetings. We're back at the Moose Club now. Some of the meetings that we've had recently, we had information on pot growing. The Marine Exchange Building, including an after-hours event there, and Travel Juno. The Blessing of the Fleet, went to that. I took a tour of the projected site for the senior housing, went to Empty Bowls. The Alaska Committee had a meeting, and as you can imagine, most of the topic was about the petition that's going around by the group of people who want to move the legislature. And that was the main thing. And also that there's going to need to be a lot more support for Gavel, Alaska, and especially if the legislature moves or if there is a special assembly, a special legislative call later on this summer. That there's a lot of stuff that happened at that meeting, but let's see. Oh, I went to that wonderful opening of that fishery spot, and now I can't remember the name of the people who contributed the land, but it's right across from DIPEC. Do you remember the name of the people?
The Heisers.
Heisers, that's right. That's it. Beautiful, beautiful area, and it was just, the kids were out there flying kites, and it was just a nice, nice place to go fish. That's great. So let's see. Did I tell you I went to Empty Bowls? Yep. I think so. One thing that was not a lot of fun was the memorial services for really great people who have had a long history in Juneau. Charlotte and Dave Richards were here forever, and then they moved up north. Well, Charlotte passed away. Jack Cadigan.
Mm-hmm.
And Selena Everson, who's a leader in the Native community. Anyway, these were very great losses, I think. Anyway, that's all.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Becker. Ms. Glashefs?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Committee of the Whole met on the 29th of April. We talked about business case for the new City Hall, talked about senior housing land purchase, a little bit about senior housing tax abatement, sort of started that discussion, heard about the sleep-off update, and we just took the Child Care Committee's report. We didn't talk about it at all. The next COW will have the Child Care Report on it as a topic. Also, senior housing tax abatement, Valley Transit Center update, and that Parks and Rec master plan that you've been reading, it's, that will be up, and you'll get a little bit of a, it's mo- the version you have is mostly correct. There'll be a small addendum, so you don't have to read it all again. And then also the chronic nuisance property ordinance. All of that will be at the next COW, which is next Monday. I did a lot of some of the things that you all did, so I wanted to congratulate Kathy Ruddy, Sally Smith, Cheryl Samuel, and Allison Brown for getting a Meritorious Service Award at UAS. And all stellar citizens who have done a lot for this community and for the university. Richard Karstensen was honored with an honorary doctorate, another person who has done a tremendous amount for education and natural history here in Juneau. So that was fun to go to the dinner and to the commencement to hear and to see them honored. Also attended the TBMP JADC tourism discussion about tourism capacity. I was honored to go to the Alaska Committee on behalf of the mayor at 7 a.m. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. Appreciate that. and to the ferry rally to advocate for ferries, vital to our Southeast communities. The Maritime Fest, I ate some fish that was cooked by other assembly members. Also, entered the sailboat race, which we won twice.
Nice.
I'm not bragging. No, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure we won. We came in. We crossed the finish line first. How about that? My day job involves with becoming an outdoor woman. So thank you for the shout out, Ms. Hughes Scandies. It is a great event. If women in the community haven't heard of it, becoming an outdoor woman happens every spring at the Bible camp, and often told that it. You know, a woman said, it changed my life. And I said, oh, thanks. Just sort of kidding. And she said, no, seriously. Anyway, so it's a great thing if you want to learn some outdoor skills. And for Ms. Becker, it's the Marjorie and Ed Heiser. I looked it up, the fishing spot. Yeah. A great event there. Also, greeted the first cruise ship for a short time. And we all were standing there, and the people were coming off, and it sort of looked like we were selling something. So some people didn't want to talk to us. So I started different greetings so that people would talk to us, and then I started on behalf of the mayor, I'd like to welcome you to the Juneau. So I got a little more friendly, and that engendered a couple who said, oh, on behalf of the mayor, I won't name the city, but it's a large West Coast city. said, our mayor, we don't see our mayor ever, so can I take your picture? So she took a picture on behalf of the mayor. So she was pretty excited that a mayor would come out to visit somebody. So that worked for, that worked pretty well. So they didn't think I was trying to sell them a tour or something.
I love that. They were dodging you.
And that's all I have. I'll do the presiding officer report since that's next. Is that, that's, want me to do that?
Certainly.
Okay, two presiding officer reports. It says P.O. Gladyszewski. That's presiding officer, not parole officer. I was trying to figure out what P.O. was. So on your calendars, if you would please put for September 9th and September 12th for different hearings. One, the September 9th, which is a Monday, I think we said 5:30. That's the Mountainside Estates appeal that will be we will hear that appeal. And the September 12th, which is a Thursday, that's the VOA versus assessor appeal. And so we had a first meeting and set the schedule of all their briefing schedule, and it culminates in those dates. So ask the clerk for those dates, and those were look like dates when were viable. So those are the two dates for that hearing. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Gladyszewski. Does any... Ms.
Yes, Madam Mayor, if I could just pass on quickly in regards to Mr. Covington's testimony earlier today. So he is correct. There are signs up that are incorrect, and that determination was made at the end of last season, right as our park rangers were getting ready to go on to their other employment, and they have not had a chance to remove them yet. So we will follow up with Mr. Covington and confirm he is correct. And just so you know, the signs will be removed.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor.
Ms. Hill.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a little follow-up about the MRV meeting on Centennial Hall, the Centennial Hall needs. Just try to characterize it slightly different than Mr. Jones' characterization. They did provide several different displays of different Centennial Halls or public buildings around the state, and it was very telling, actually, that we were in the biggest meeting room, not the big ballroom, but the biggest meeting room in Centennial Hall, which was a very dumpy room, actually. So it actually did drive the point home that we are the capital and we don't have a nice facility at all. And there's a lot of places in Alaska, coastal Alaska, that have very nice facilities that take advantage of the area. And then they passed out questionnaires to solicit information from people. So that was kind of just the first shot. So I just wanted to kind of round out that description somewhat.
Thank you, Ms. Hale.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones?
Thank you. On the Harris appeal, it says no hearing requested. I'm assuming that that means nothing before the assembly until we get the hearing officer report. Is that what that means?
Correct. Thank you.
So we in essence, will get the hearing officer report, and we will have to decide to accept it or not, correct?
Correct. That's the process for the hearing officers.
Okay. So we have no idea when that might be.
Looking at the dates, I would anticipate the final briefing would be done sometime in late July. And at that point, assuming there's no hearing that's requested at that date, the hearing officer by code has 45 days to submit the final report to the decision to the parties. They have an opportunity to object to it if there is anything. And then, you know, we would, you know, the assembly would probably be looking at something in either late August or early September.
Thank you.
All right. Any last words from the assembly? Any continuation of public participation on non-agenda items? Anything further from our staff? All right. Seeing and hearing none. We're adjourned.